Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit in Vegas with almost 93-year-old Ed Hall, an Army Air Corps veteran of World War II. He was there the day America was drawn into the war, and he told us about 3 close calls he had at Hickam Field on Oahu that morning. From that first trip he made in a truck taking wounded to the base hospital, Ed was going almost nonstop for more than 3 days. So for those 3.5 days afterwards, you're moving food, you're moving supplies, you're cleaning up the debris, rubble.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it all had to be cleaned up. Somebody had to do it. And, of course, we were the only trucking company on the base. I think we had about 20 or 25 trucks, 2.5-tonners, a few pickups, a few ton-and-a-halves. But they were all busy. And we were busy day and night for about 3 or 4 days.
You mentioned for us a little bit ago the names of 3 guys you knew that were killed at Hickam that day. Do you remember when you found out about that and what that was like for an 18-year-old kid to know these buddies are gone?
I know I was talking to somebody and they told me Kelly was killed. I don't guess I found out about the others until some years later. When I went back to Hickam the first time, they had the monument by the flagpole, and they heard the names on the killed in action. That's when I found out about the other two.
You mentioned the flagpole. That's one of the iconic images of December 7th. Here's a rendering of it right here on a program from a memorial service. You see the smoke from the barracks in the background. Yep. And that flagpole towering over the scene with the stars and stripes flying amidst the smoke. When you look at that image, what comes to mind?
The horrible day and the beautiful flag defending this country as a symbol. It makes me proud. The flag of this country makes me proud every time I see it. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to choke up now.
No, that's all right. Well, there aren't too many people who found out about Pearl Harbor the way you did, by Japanese shooting at you. Most of the country found out the next day when the president addressed the nation and gave that famous Day of Infamy speech. If you were going nonstop in that truck for 3 days, am I thinking you didn't get to hear that speech at the time?
Nope, I was too busy.
I'm sure you've heard it since.
Oh, yeah.
When you hear FDR going through that list of things that happened and what it means and what we're going to do now, what comes to mind for you?
What a great country this is, and actually what a great President Roosevelt was at the time. He gave us all an inspiration that we were going to win this war. There was no doubt about it. Well, we knew that before he ever made the speech, but any country could be foolish enough to attack the United States of America at that time, and even today, they got rocks in their head.
Well, and that was the first day of the war. You were supposed to be out of the service 6 months later, but that didn't happen, the duration of the hostilities. So what did you do for the rest of World War II? You had another almost 4 years to go there.
Well, they shoved me around all over the Pacific doing my warehouse thing, supplies. Now, I was at a place called the Phoenix Islands, which very few people have ever heard of, and Marshall Islands. And I was sent down to the New Hebrides one time, but that was only a 2-week stint for inventory of the different air bases down in that area. That was about what I did. The whole rest of the war was in supply.
And sorry, I'm bouncing around, but back on the 7th, there are a lot of things about that day. There are a lot of what-ifs. There are a lot of fortunate things that happened that day as much as the tragedy that unfolded. And a lot of that has to do with Pearl Harbor, but even at Hickam, the Japanese bombed a baseball field, but they didn't think they were bombing a baseball field. Tell us that story, because that definitely affects what people were able to do after the attack.
Okay. It seems that the Japanese had quite a few maps of everything in the islands. There were a few that they did not have correct maps. For instance, the officers' club, they knew, was in the basement of the base operations tower, so they didn't bomb that. They didn't bother to strafe it. If they did, it was by accident. But the aviation fuel storage area was supposed to be in one place, and this is the map that the Japanese had. However, at the last minute, so to speak, they changed the aviation gasoline storage area to another place and made a baseball field out of what would have been the fuel storage. Well, the Japanese bombed the baseball field and just tore it all to pieces. So we all thought that was rather amusing.
So the rest of the war, you mentioned you're sent to different places throughout the Pacific, all the time working in supply, but all the time around these guys who are flying bombers and fighters, guys who are on the bomber crews. What kind of respect and esteem do you have for guys who served in an Army Air Corps at that time that was pretty primitive? A lot of these things had never been done before, and they didn't know what these planes were capable of, how dangerous they were. How much respect and admiration do you have for those guys who put their lives on the line that way?
There's no way to express my feelings of those air crews. The dangers that they went through, the wounds and the psychological sufferings that they experienced, there's not enough admiration in the world for those guys. Absolutely a great bunch of men. When you consider you had to fly, especially in Europe, you had to fly 25 missions in order to be able to come home if you made it alive. And there was very few crews that finished the war or the B-17 together.
For you personally, you described three times the first day of the war where it so easily could have been you, and your name would have been added to that list that you honor every year on December 7th. What about the rest of the war? Were there any situations that you found yourself in that you look back on now and say, yeah, you know, I came pretty close there too?
No, not really. Down in New Hebrides Islands and the Phoenix Islands, we experienced some nighttime bombing, but nothing close where I might have been in danger. Actually, all they were doing were flying over, dropping a few bombs on the runways or wherever they could. But mostly they were taking pictures. They were photographic Japanese planes. So they didn't really do any big damage. Down in the New Hebrides, I understand they did a lot of damage before I got there. A lot of people were killed. But when I was there, we got bombed a few times. But my experience was nothing like the 7th of December, not even close.
I'm sure there's at least one other date in the war that brings back some memories for you. VJ Day, when Japan surrendered. Do you remember hearing about that or what that meant to you?
Well, yeah, I finally thought, well, they got what they had coming and even more for what they did. I just can't get over that sneak attack. And then again, I can't get over a lot of the faults of this country for not being alert enough to protect us, to protect that fleet there at Pearl Harbor. All the mistakes that was made that day, and any one mistake had not been made, the outcome of that attack could have been a lot different. But that's the way things went. As they say, that's the way the ball bounced.
And who knows, maybe that sleeping giant wouldn't have woken up if it hadn't been as severe and devastating as it was. Now, I understand that this was something you didn't talk about for a long time as you came back to the States and lived in Chicago for a long time, working on elevators and all those sky rises there. But you moved here to Las Vegas a little more than 20 years ago. And that's when you first joined the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association, was here in Vegas?
No, I had joined a group in the Chicago area, but they weren't quite as active as our chapter here in Las Vegas. Here in Vegas, we tried to go to schools and inform the history class of what happened that day and our experiences.
Why is that important to you?
Because I think history in this country is very important, very, very important. I know when I went to school, at grammar school, we had a history teacher. She was an older lady, and when I say old, I do mean old. She taught my father. She was a fantastic teacher, and I just loved history. I follow the history of this country, and I just cannot understand why the Board of Education throughout the United States is not throwing more emphasis on the history of this country that should be taught in schools, which they are not teaching.
With regard to December 7th, most of the world alive today wasn't alive 75 years ago. So if you want to share something about that history with the people listening right now, what do you think is the most important thing for people to understand?
There's a lot of things that people should understand about this country and its history. The founding of this country is number one, of course. The fact that the British tried again in 1812 and were defeated, but they came close. I think that history should be embedded in the pupils of the schools today. The political situation in this country, the history of the politics should be studied. People should understand the politics, the privileges of being a politician, and also the faults of politicians, and try to weed out those that are not deserving. I love this country, but I'm at an age now that actually, the way this country is going, the way the politicians have treated this country, I'm glad I'm not going to be here too much longer to suffer what is going to happen in this country if somebody doesn't step up to the plate and look at what's wrong with this country and try to straighten it out.
Are you declaring your candidacy?
I just might vote for none of the above.
You've been back to Oahu many times. What is that like for you, to go back to Hickam Field and see those bullet holes that are still there, or to go to Pearl Harbor and see those tiers of oil coming up from the Arizona to read all those names? What is that like for you?
Well, to those that you just mentioned, it chokes me up. And I really have a hard time, even right now, I have a hard time keeping the tears back. When I think about all the guys that passed away and people I knew that were so hurt and lost their lives, it really gets hard for me at times.
Have you ever found yourself looking at those kinds of things, contemplating those realities and wondering, why wasn't it me? How close did I come to being one of those names?
Oh, yeah, I've thought about how close it came that I might have been one of them. And I hate to say it, but I rejoice that I wasn't. I think any man that escapes death and war has to feel good about himself. And I've heard people say, why couldn't it have been me? Why did it have to be him? Well, I personally don't feel that way. I was there. I did what I had to do. And I think I did my part. And I survived. And I'm happy I survived.
I don't know if a mathematician could assign odds to having those three close calls in that short of a time period, what the odds are surviving all three of those. But what do you make of that? Do you have an explanation as to how and why you made it through all of that?
No, the only thing I can say is the good Lord up above took care of me that day. And he's taken care of me all of these years that I'm still here and enjoying fairly decent health, and I'm thankful for that every day.
Is there something that you would say you're most proud of?
Other than I served my country at a time of its need, no, there's nothing else I can say.
I think that's something to be very proud of. And another experience that you've had that a lot of veterans have had across this country, and it's an ongoing effort, the Honor Flight Network, flying veterans back to Washington, D.C. to see the World War II Memorial that wasn't finished until 2004. You had that opportunity. What did that experience mean to you?
That's hard to express. The feeling of sympathy, loneliness, the fact that I lost some friends during the war. When I see those columns at that memorial, it represents each state. And I think of the guys that I served with and from the different states that they were from and how well they served their country too. I just have a great, wonderful feeling that we all did it together. That monument was the most astounding thing I have ever seen. That wall with all those gold stars on it. And if my memory serves me right, each star represents 1,000 men killed in World War II. I forget the number of stars, but there's thousands of them.
Represents 406,000 Americans who died.
I knew it was up there somewhere along there. I couldn't remember the exact figure, but that was a wonderful, wonderful trip. And to those who initiated and produced that monument, my heartfelt thanks.
Well, that's my cue. I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving. Thank you for telling us your story and helping us understand December 7th from your perspective. Is there anything else that you think people need to know and people need to remember?
Just to remember, this is the greatest country that there ever was. And if somebody doesn't do something that has the power and the know-how to change it, I am deathly afraid this country is not going to be around much longer. Come on, Americans. Make this country survive and great again, as it always has been.
How's that for a challenge to wrap up our time today? One thing I appreciate about all these veterans we meet is that they never hold back. They tell us exactly how they really feel. That is Ed Hall of Las Vegas, Nevada. Find photos and videos of Ed at hometownheroesradio.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And join us again next time for another Pearl Harbor survivor and his incredible story. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.